Well, good morning. How y'all doing? Really? Everyone? Baseball fans? Everybody's doing all right. It's October, right? And October baseball is something I particularly enjoy, and usually I get to do it without the burden of my team playing. So it's very, very relaxing and refreshing. So the playoff season this year started at Yankee Stadium. The first game started with the Astros playing the Yankees. It's a wild card game. That means one game, winner take all, they get to go into the real playoffs. And the folks in New York were really excited because they hadn't had this chance in a while. And so I was captivated by the crowd that had gathered so early in that stadium. And the people were singing and they were chanting and they were cheering and they were expecting something great. And then those same people, 2 hours later, they're booing. That really grabbed me. Here they are, 2 hours before, super enthusiastic about what they'd hoped to see. 2 hours later, booing. And that grabbed me because we're going to see Jesus today in our series. He's going to face something similar. He's going to face a wildly enthusiastic crowd, hoping, expecting to see something remarkable from him. And through it all today, it's going to challenge each of us to consider what our expectations are of what Jesus may or may not do, and how we respond when he delivers the way we want him to, or those times when he doesn't deliver. So today, whether you're a casual fan of Jesus or a hardcore supporter, or maybe really at this point you don't care all that much, for each of us today, there's going to be a challenge. There's going to be an invitation to something more, to something better. And so we're going to be in John chapter 4 today, towards the end, where we're starting our series. And to this point in our series, we've seen Jesus, well, he's doing some traveling. Right back in chapter 2, we saw him go to the town of Cana, and he did a miraculous thing there. There was a wedding. They ran out of wine. He turned the water into wine. And from there, he went to Jerusalem. We saw him go to Jerusalem, and we saw him turn everything upside down in the temple because they'd put the wrong thing at the center of their worship. And then after he encounters a religious person there who doesn't understand, he needs to be spiritually reborn. He travels some more through the region of Samaria. And last week we saw him encounter a desperate woman there and who also needed to know that she needed spiritual rebirth. And so he's made this circuit and he's come back today to Galilee. And when he gets there, he's met by this very enthusiastic crowd. And we'll see why here as we start. This is John chapter 4, verse 45. It says, when he arrived in Galilee, the Galileans welcomed him. They had seen all that he had done in Jerusalem at the Passover festival, for they also had been there. So when he gets there, there's a crowd, and they're excited because they'd seen him do some stuff, right? They'd been in Jerusalem, which is where Jesus did a number of apparently miraculous things. Some of them are recorded in John's gospel. Some of them are recorded in other places. And these people have come home saying, wow, this guy can do some stuff. And so when they hear that he's come back to his home, we'd call it country, they're pretty excited. They're pretty excited. And so look at verse 46. It says, once more he visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine. And there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum. So he comes to Galilee, and now he actually goes back to the town of Cana, which is in Galilee. This is the place where he turned about 150 gallons of water into really fine wine. So these people are extra excited when he shows up, right? They probably brought their jugs and their bottles, and they're like, this is going to be great. And there's one person, though, in particular, who really, really wants Jesus to deliver. And it's this official, this important government official. And it says here that he has a son who's sick in Capernaum, which is another town, and it's 15 or 20 miles away. And verse 47 says this, when this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son, who was close to death. So this is a desperate father. And he has a son who is terminally ill. He's close to death. And so when he hears that Jesus has come to the region, he does exactly what any one of us would have done if we had a terminally ill child and we knew there was somebody nearby who could help. He makes the journey. And he's desperate. And I want you to hear what he actually asks Jesus. He begs Jesus to come with him. Come on, let's go. Travel with me back. Because my son needs what you can do. And that's important. This guy, he has faith. It's not perfect faith. But it's faith that Jesus can do the remarkable. He at least believes that Jesus, he can do miracles. And he's representative of what all the Galileans thought. They'd been in Jerusalem. They'd seen Jesus do stuff. And so they know this guy, he's some kind of miracle worker. Maybe he's a magician. We don't know. We don't care. But he can do stuff. And it's with that faith that this man comes and just begs him and says, would you come with me? There's something I need you to do. It's my son. And again, it's probably exactly what any of us would have done. And so today when we talk about a relationship with God, and specifically a relationship with Jesus, I want us to be thinking a little bit about this man, because the reality is, what he is exhibiting probably describes a lot of us, right? I mean, you might be here today and you believe in Jesus' ability to do the remarkable. You have faith that Jesus can do some stuff. And in fact, you've developed a relationship with Jesus based on that. You've gotten good at coming to Jesus with what you want or what you need, and asking him for it. And that's your relationship. Just like this guy. You have faith, but it's faith that Jesus will do things for you if and when you ask. Now, others of us, we're not quite that far along. We don't have expectations of Jesus. We might not even have faith in Jesus. We're more like the guy in John chapter 5, in the very next story. We're going to look at him there, because in John chapter 5, there's a man who also has a desperate need, and he also has an encounter with Jesus, but it's very different from this one. So for a moment, let's leave our story, okay? The desperate father, the terminally ill son, the begging of Jesus to come and do something. Let's just leave that. We're going to jump into John chapter 5, and the first few verses there set the scene. It says, now there is in Jerusalem near the sheep gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here, a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. Now, one who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. So ancient cities, generally surrounded by walls, right? And in the walls, there are gates so people can come in and out of the city. And this particular gate is called the Sheep Gate because it's where they brought the sheep into the city on their way to the temple, where they would be sacrificed, generally speaking. And inside the gate, there was a pool, not a swimming pool, like you and I think of it, but a pool, a large pool of water, and it's where they washed the sheep on the way. Kind of a gross place to swim, actually, if you think about it. But the local belief was that every once in a while, an angel stirred up the water. And when that happened, the first person in got healed. So you can imagine what has happened. It says in the text that a great number of people used to lie there. Those who were desperately sick, right? Those who couldn't walk, those who were paralyzed, those who were blind, those with significant physical needs. Because if that was you, and you thought that when the angel stirred the water, the first one in got healed, you'd be there, wouldn't you? And John introduces us to one particular person who's there at the pool. And it says in my text that he's an invalid. That's kind of a weird word. We don't use it a lot, do we? It's a little uncomfortable because it sounds harsh. But it's an accurate description in his culture of how this guy would have experienced life. Couldn't walk, not seen as good for anything, considered invalid. And he's been this way for 38 years. That's a really long time. Especially when you consider that the life expectancy for men at this time was just over 40 years. So he has been in this condition for as long as most guys lived. And he waits there at the pool. So this is a guy in a desperate situation. Now, unlike the story in chapter 4 where a man comes and begs Jesus, he's got faith in him as a miracle worker, come and help me. This guy doesn't even know Jesus, but Jesus comes up to him, right? That's what happens in the next verse. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, hey, do you want to get well? So Jesus just walks up to this guy. He figures out his situation and he says, hey, do you want to get well? In other words, what are your expectations? What do you hope? What do you think might happen? And his answer in verse 7 shows what he expects, and it shows where his faith is starting, where it starts. Verse 7, sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Man, can you imagine the frustration of being in a place where you know that water, that's where I get healed. That's what I need. But every time it stirs, this crowd of people, they start moving for the water, and every single time somebody else gets there first. That's this guy's life. But by his response, what we learn is he has no idea who Jesus is or what Jesus is actually saying, but he sees Jesus as somebody who might be able to help him. In other words, I don't know who you are. I don't know why you're even asking me this, but look, I need to get to the water, and maybe you could assist me. You know, maybe you could give me an assist on my way to what I really need, which is that water. That's where this guy's starting from. So two guys, two desperate situations. One, believing that Jesus can do something miraculous, begs him to come and heal his son. The other, no idea, no expectation of Jesus, views Jesus as somebody who might be able to give him an assist. And that might describe some of us here today, right? You might view Jesus or this Jesus thing as something that could assist you to get to what you really need, which maybe is a better life or a better job, a better family. Whatever you've identified and said, if I had that, my life would be better, and maybe, Jesus, you can help me get there. That's as far as you've come. So the question is, how is Jesus going to respond to these two men? And what we're going to see today is that he issues each of them a challenge. And the challenge is essentially to take one step. To go one step beyond where you are in your faith right now, which is so often what Jesus does. He doesn't always expect you to go from 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds flat. He expects you to take a step. He invites you to take a step. So let's see the step that he invites these people to take. Let's go back to chapter 4, to the desperate father, terminally ill son. Just come with me, he says, right? Now listen to Jesus' response. In verse 48, it says, "Unless you people see signs and wonders," Jesus told him, "you will never believe." That's an odd thing to say, isn't it? Especially to a desperate father with a terminally ill child. But Jesus is talking not just to him, he's talking to the whole crowd. The crowd that is no doubt gathered around when they heard Jesus is here, and they're thinking, this ought to be good. We want to see something. And Jesus says, man, unless you see signs and wonders, you'll never believe. And the question is, believe what? See, these people already believe that Jesus is a miracle worker. They already believe that. But Jesus wants them to believe something further, something better, something about himself. And so he's going to challenge this man to take that step. But he starts by saying, our relationship is based on what I can do for you. And I want you to take a step. Well, the father responds the way you might expect. He says, sir, just come down before my child dies. I don't understand all this signs and wonders thing. All I know is if you don't come down with me right now, my child is going to die, and you could do something about it. So just come with me. And here's the challenge. Look what Jesus says to him. Go. Go, Jesus replied. Your son will live. And what the man doesn't know is that in that moment, speaking those words, Jesus has just healed his son. This isn't prophecy. This isn't, I can see the future. I know it's going to be okay. This is, I just healed your son. Go. He doesn't know that. What he does know is, listen, if you would just come and say the right magic words or spread the magic potion, whatever it is you do to heal people, if you would, you have to come with me so that you can heal my son. And Jesus looks at him and says, listen, I'm not going to do that. Just turn around and go. Jesus has just healed his son, but in order for this man to experience it, in order for this man to receive it, he's going to have to turn around and do the opposite of what he wants. He's going to have to walk home without Jesus. And that's a challenge. And the challenge is Jesus saying, I want you to see me as more than a miracle worker, more than a hocus-pocus guy. I want you to see that I am somebody who can speak words and heal a child who's 20 miles away. That's different. So that's the challenge. Now, the challenge for the other man who's lying beside this pool and sees Jesus as someone who could assist him get to what he really needs, Jesus gives him a challenge as well. It's in chapter 5, verse 8, because Jesus looks at him and says, get up. Get up. Pick up your mat and walk. And what he doesn't know is that Jesus has just healed him. Same things, words, power, healing. But in order to receive it, in order to experience it, this man is going to have to take a step beyond thinking that Jesus is somebody who can assist him get what he really needs. The challenge from Jesus is, look at me. Not the water. Look at me. This thing that you think is your source of life, you've got it wrong. It's me. Look at me. And I don't know how long it takes, but it's for some length of time, the man has to listen to this, he has to absorb this, and he has to make a choice. And the choice might be something like this. This guy just told me to get up. And if I try that, and I fall on my face, I'm going to feel like an idiot. Right? So at some point he has to decide. Can this guy assist me get to the water, or can he do something more? Well, what happens is verse 9. At once, the man was cured. I told you that already. He picked up his mat and he walked. So he decides to do it. He gets up. He can walk. He rolls up his bedroll and off he goes. And then it says, the day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And you think, well, who cares what day of the week it was? Oh, the religious people care. They care a lot. And their response to this man is going to show us something about whether this man really decided to look to Jesus. It was a Sabbath, verse 10 says, and so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. Yeah, it's just as ridiculous as it sounds. It really is. They don't care that the guy has been healed. They care that he's breaking the rules. And it's one of their rules. They decided that the scriptures command that you couldn't do any work on the Sabbath. It meant, among other things, you can't carry your sleeping bag from one room to another. You could carry it from one side of the room to the other side, but not outside. They're very specific. And this guy's broken the law. And he could be in big trouble. And so watch how this guy responds. He responds by saying, hey, wait. I didn't do this. The guy who made me well, he's the one who told me I could pick up my mat and walk, right? And down in verse 12, so they asked him, well, who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk? That's the guy who's in trouble. And this man who's been healed after 38 years says, I have no idea. I have no idea who it is. So they let him go, and the text tells the story about how later that day he's in or near the temple, and he runs into Jesus. And Jesus says to him something like, hey, you're well. What do you know? And then he says, you know, you should probably stop sinning, because if you don't, something worse is going to happen. And the guy's like, what? And his response to this encounter with Jesus is that he goes back to the Jewish leaders and tells them. So the man went away. He went away from his encounter with Jesus and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who made him well. This isn't, hey, everybody, good news. Jesus made me well. This is the guy you're looking for, Jesus. And we know this because of the Jewish leaders' response. The response is, ultimately, in verse 18, so for this reason, they tried all the more to kill him. So this guy who gets healed by Jesus, he actually turns Jesus in to the authorities. And ultimately, they will. They'll track Jesus down and they'll kill him. And so he's faced with this choice to see Jesus as more than just someone who can assist him get what he wants, and he decides not to. He's perfectly happy, I'm sure, to be walking around. But that's as far as it goes. All right, let's go back to the desperate father. When Jesus says to him, go, just go, turn around, your son's going to live, this is his response. The man took Jesus at his word and departed. And it's hard in that little sentence for us to imagine the gigantic shift that's occurred in this man's life. Jesus has said, you need to see me as more than a miracle worker who has to go with you to do something magic or special to heal your son. You need to see me as somebody different than that. And the guy says, okay. And he turns around and he heads home. And it says, while he was still on the way, his servants met him with the news that, in fact, his boy was alive, living. And when he inquired as to the time when his son got better, they said to him, yesterday, at 1 p.m, the fever, the sickness, left him. And then the father realized that this was the exact time at which Jesus had said to him, your son will live. So he and his whole household believed. Believed what? We've already said this guy believed. He believed that Jesus had the ability to do the miraculous. But Jesus has challenged him to take a step farther than that and to see him as something more than a miracle worker. And it's this to which this man now responds. He believes the way Jesus wants him to believe, the way John has already told us in his gospel in chapter 20, he wants us to believe as well. He says, these things are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And so this was the challenge to the man, to see Jesus as more than a miracle worker, to see him as the one sent by God, the Son of God, the one who has the ability to give and to restore life, and to believe in him and embrace him and who he really is in such a way that he receives life, the life of God that begins now and extends forever. That's what he believed. And it's because he took Jesus up on his challenge. And the man learns that the point is more than just the miracles. See, when we exist in a relationship with Jesus that is based on what he can do for us, it makes us think that the things that he does for us are the point. And Jesus wants you to see today that it's about more than miracles. The miracles are awesome. The miracles are wonderful, but they aren't the point. They point to something greater. There's something greater about Jesus than just what he can do, even his miracles. They point to the fact that Jesus is Messiah, that he's Son of God, that he can give you life, and that you can know him. And that's better than miracles. And you know this, right? I mean, we know this. Because both of these guys got their miracle, right? The guy who believed and the guy who never did. Jesus did the miracle for them. So we know that their ability to receive the miracle and believe it isn't the point. We also know the miracles aren't the point because he didn't heal all the terminally ill children, just the one. He didn't heal all of the people gathered around the pool that day, just the one. And it's wonderful that he does that, but he wants you to know it's pointing to something even greater, that the miracles aren't the point. And you know this, because you've asked God, haven't you? You've begged him for something. Something you needed. And he didn't do it the way you wanted, and it's been a struggle. I want you to hear Jesus today saying there's more to it than miracles. That I can give you myself, not just a miracle. We know this because we had a terminally ill child. We believed. And we begged. And Jesus didn't heal our son. Brian died. But in that moment, in that time, what we learned is that Jesus has much more to offer than just a miracle. That in your darkest time of life, in your place of most desperate need, you can turn to Jesus, and he's right there. And he offers to you a relationship and an intimacy that's beyond just being a miracle worker. And I think that's what Jesus wants you to see today. It's so life-giving to recognize that Jesus is more than just what he can do for you. To trust him that he's the Son of God, that he's Messiah, that he does what he does. He can do what he can do. He does do the miraculous, so ask him. But recognize that he's more than that. And turn to him, not to just what he can do for you. Because when you do that, that's when you begin to receive and experience the life that Jesus offers. The healing, the restoration. I want you today to think about what you might be looking to or looking for from Jesus. The reality is you might have a pool of water out there. You know, something that you've identified as the thing you really need. And what you're hoping is that Jesus will get you there. Or maybe you do have a desperate and serious need and you've been asking Jesus, but you've made the thing the point. And maybe today Jesus is calling you to a fresh time, a fresh moment of believing in him. More than a miracle. More than an assist. And as we pray this morning, I'm going to just give you a moment. I just want you to think about it. I just want you to consider in your heart what it is that could be your pool. Or what's the miracle? And ask Jesus to give you the faith to see him as more than that. And embrace the life that Jesus has for you. Let's pray together. Lord, in different ways, we come to you today. So glad that you really are able to do the amazing. You can heal someone who's been an invalid for 38 years. You can speak words and give life to somebody 20 miles away. And yet we acknowledge our ability to make that the point and to forget that those things point us to something greater. And today we want to embrace that there's something greater. There's something more about you than just what you can do for us. And so in a fresh way today, in a new way, we turn. In our minds and in our hearts, with our wills, we turn from the thing we're hoping you would do or the place we hope you would take us. We turn from that. And we turn to you. And we say thank you for offering to us more than a miracle, for offering to us yourself. And teach us today and every day how to know you, how to be close to you, how to recognize your presence in our life. And we do this with thanksgiving. In Jesus' name, amen.